Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined by Barry Trammell, here to recap the Thunder's 87-78 loss to the Dallas Mavericks on Wednesday night in Dallas. And Barry, I have to start with where we left off Saturday, because I'm pretty sure you declared the Thunder's 30-point or whatever it was loss to the Nuggets is one of the worst games in Thunder history that you have watched. Well, I have a challenger, and it was the game we watched tonight. I think it was way worse than Saturday to watch, because
do you really?
It was 87-78, no Luka, neither team played well. Boy, I had trouble with that one. But you think this was better than Saturday?
Oh, I thought, yeah, because I wasn't sure there until really till the fourth quarter who was going to win. I mean, I looked like Dallas was going to win, but it was a little bit competitive. That Denver game, God, when the game's over in the first quarter, then that's where I check out. Now, I'm not saying that it was any kind of masterpiece or that I enjoyed it, but it was clearly just an offensive mess. But both teams, you know, there were games within the game tonight.
Yeah, Dallas goes more competitive, I'll give you.
Well, Dallas goes 1 of 22 from three-point range. Well, that gets my interest. How far can they take it? Could they go 1 for 30? could they go 1 for 33? What's the NBA record for most misses with making, you know, less than 5 three-pointers? That kind of thing. Yeah. I'm always up for a good statistical chase like that.
I mean, I thought that was the game, right? I mean, that was why it was so close, is Dallas
right.
Just shooting what seemed like historically bad from three. And then Tim Hardaway Jr. early on in that third quarter makes a three. Then Dallas hits four of its next 5 three-pointers, I think it was. That puts them up by 19. And then it was never really a game after that. The Thunder made a little bit of a run, but then the Mavs pushed it back up to 20. So, yeah, that I thought that is definitely where the game turned. Once they were so bad, and then they got hot there briefly.
Yeah, you know, so things like that kept me mildly amused and interested. And it was, you know, this was still – even at the end of the fourth quarter, the Thunder got down 19, but cut it to 14 at the end of the third. And you thought, well, are they going to come back again? And then the answer – they cut it to 12. But then the answer is no. They got down 20. Got down 22 with 6:54 left. Trey Burke hits a layup. They sort of let him just drive in and score easy, I think. And it's a 22-point game. And Dallas scored 1 point the rest of the game. Everybody was asking about the Thunder's big defense down the stretch. Looked like Dallas was just sort of disinterested myself. But Thunder got hot, scored 9 points in the last 3 minutes to make it a little less embarrassing, but it was a game that magnified that this Thunder offense, you know, they're sort of a feel good story. They're playing better than anybody thought they would, but their offense stinks. They're down near the bottom, 27th going into tonight. I assume they're going to fall to 29th after this game. I mean, they're one of the worst NBA offenses going. And, when SGA is not on the top of his game, which he clearly wasn't tonight, well, then this team's going to be in serious trouble.
Yeah, it was the Thunder's lowest scoring game of the season. It was the 8th lowest scoring game in Thunder history. The Thunder shot a season worst 33%. Basically, any number you want to throw out, this was pretty much the worst it was. And I say it was like the worst game to watch, because Dallas was almost just as bad offensively. And we didn't even have the entertainment factor of watching Luka Doncic play, and sort of that matchup with Lu Dort on him took away some of the entertainment factor for me. But first, Barry, I was looking, you know, in the Thunder record book and the media guide just to see, you know, where this game would rank as far as lowest scoring games in Thunder history. And I don't remember this game. I know I should, but I want you to give me and maybe the rest of us who don't remember this game a little history lesson. November 16th, 2014. I don't know if you know what happened on that day, but the The Rockets beat the Thunder 69-65. How, what in the world happened on that game? I don't remember it, but I feel like that's a lowest scoring game that won't be touched anytime soon.
Now, well, give me the date again, because
it was November 16th, 2014. It was 69-65. The Thunder started 3-8 that season. Harden was 5-17 for Houston. Reggie Jackson led the Thunder with 15 points. He was 3-11.
Well, that was the year. That was the year the Thunder was wiped out by injury.
No Westbrook in that game.
Right, and the Thunder was having a devil of a time scoring. I barely remember it, but I remember when you said 69-65, I thought of it and thought, wow, you know, I remember that. Yeah, and it was a novel game, and that it was just so bad. But it was at least competitive. Yeah, it went down to the wire.
Like this one was way better than that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The difference is back then, 14-15, the Thunder was not in the habit, or anybody else really, of scoring big numbers. The NBA explosion had not occurred in terms of huge 3-point explosions. Nobody's jacking up 35, 40 3-pointers a game.
Offensive game is smart.
Yeah, games over 110 points were rare. Now they're fairly common. So, I mean, in some ways, this one was pretty bad, even compared to that one. But, you know, a game like this, when SGA, he wasn't scoring in the paint. I think he was 3-10 in the paint tonight. And everybody was off. You know, Ty Jerome had a nice night, but even the misses, you know, Baisley had a couple of threes that either missed the rim or were air balls. You know, how Lou Dort often misses badly. Everybody was missing badly tonight. So I don't know what's going on, but it's a case of this is really closer to who the Thunder is than, you know, some of these like Atlanta, 118-109. This is sort of who the Thunder are, especially when Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has a subpar game.
Yeah, I mean, it shows you how low their offensive floor is. I mean, their ceiling isn't all that high. Sometimes they can reach it against bad defensive teams, but Shai was 5-15, 15 points, and, you know, it's not a horrible line. It's pretty bad by his standards, but when he does something like that, they have virtually no chance to win. Leading the team with 15, Jerome, like you mentioned, he had 13 points off the bench. Jerome, in three games with the Thunder, has pretty much put together three of the best games of his career, which is interesting. Maladone had 11, Horford had 10, Baisley had 11. Dort was 1 of 9 and 1 of 5 from three. He really struggled shooting the ball. Mike Muscala was 0 of 3, Justin Jackson 0 of 4. Isaiah Roby, I thought, had a horrible night. He was 2 of 9. Against his former team, though he did not play. I don't think he played at all for them, but was traded from the Mavericks to the Thunder. But I don't know any other guys besides SGA that you wanted to talk about their night?
In a positive way, you know, Maladone actually scored decently. I think he was 5 of 10 shooting. He was a little loose with the ball, had some turnovers. You know, it's not good, but let's see what he had. He had 3 turnovers, so that's not bad. But no, Horford was just, you know, sort of so-so. Ty Jerome's pretty much the story. But, you know, just I don't know what it was. In this season where they're playing a bunch of games in short spaces, they had 3 straight days off. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, seems like forever. And that Denver game was such a mind number. It really seems like since Friday, since they played that Hawks game. And I don't know if it was rust. I don't know why it would be, but they just didn't seem compelled to put up.
Yeah.
It wasn't a fight, and that's not what it is. They just didn't seem capable of doing much offensively. And here's the thing that, you know what I took out of this game more than anything? How unimpressive Dallas's roster is. That's what I took out of this game.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's been the story of their season, right? I mean, they've had a lot of COVID stuff. They've had injuries, but they don't have the help that's required to compete.
No. And, you know, Porzingis is an interesting player, but he's not anything extra special, I don't think, just because he's 7'3" and can make a three-pointer, you know, every once in a while.
Well, I thought, like, Chris Fisher and Michael Cage brought up a good point on the broadcast that he used to be so good, dominant, really, defensively, and he's lost so much in that category.
That's the injuries? You think that's the injuries?
Yeah, I think it's probably the injuries.
Yeah, I don't know. Notice him on defense. Doesn't seem like to me.
Yeah, he just used to block a ton of shots. And maybe that was like sort of the wow factor defensively, maybe helped overcome his slow foot speed. But yeah, I mean, Jalen Brunson started tonight in place of Doncic, and you know he's been awesome this year. He's a really good player. But then Josh Richardson, Maxi Kleba, Dorian Finney-Smith off the bench, the guys that played the most minutes is Hardaway Jr., who can really shoot it. Trey Burke. James Johnson, former Thunder James Johnson, played 13 minutes. He was a member of the Thunder for, I don't know, a few hours or something like that before he was traded again. But yeah, they don't have a ton of depth. And you know, the Josh Richardson trade is interesting as well with what Seth Curry has been able to do in Philadelphia. So I don't know, they seem primed to make a move, but with their cap situation, it's going to be interesting to see what they can do.
Yeah, you know, I just came away unimpressed. Now, everybody looks better when Luke is out there running around, you know, no doubt about it. But good night. That was not very impressive at all. I think they'll be hard pressed to. What are they? They're right around the 8-9 range right now.
Yeah, I mean, they could fall to the play-in range.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's definitely true. So, you know, at least the Thunder doesn't expect to win, or doesn't plan to win, or doesn't hope to win. Whatever the case may be, everybody wants to say it. So.
I was thinking to myself, this is one of the best losses of the season, to lose to the Mavericks without Luka Doncic.
Yeah, this is a game they could have won.
Yeah,
and that can be problematic. So we'll see. They go back to San Antonio tomorrow night, where they had the big win over Lou Dort with Lou Dort and whatnot. So, heck, we'll see.
By the way, this the lottery situation is looking very interesting because Houston has now lost 13 in a row. So the lottery night is just going to be a stressful night for the Thunder. They could be picking 5th and 7th, 5th and 8th, or they could be picking 5th and 20th or 5th and
25th. Miami's Miami dream is over. We know that. You know, they're not going to fall to the lottery. They're going to make the playoffs. So you just got to play it out and hope for the ping pong balls fall your way. I do think Houston's going to be better when Christian Wood comes back and they might start winning a few games again. But what some of this shows me, St. Joe, is that if you're going to tank, golly, it's hard to tank. It's hard to tank because so many teams can stink without trying. You know, the Thunder has to try to stink, and it's not in their nature to do that. So
it's also hard this year with guys missing because of COVID. It's hard because I don't know. I think that, you know, this has been a trend around the league, but it's hard for some guys to stay motivated in this strange season. So not the most ideal year to tank. And we were saying the opposite at the beginning of the season because of, you know, no fans, you don't have to worry about that. So it's good to tank. And actually I wanted to touch on that. I want to get to the fan question here in a little bit, but a couple off court, non-related to this particular game, things that I thought were fairly interesting. We have a couple injury updates. Hamidou Diallo, who is out tonight, he's going to just rest through the All-Star break with the right groin soreness. So he probably won't be back until the 11th, when the Thunder plays the Mavericks again for the start of the second half of the season. George Hill, he's at about the time where he was supposed to be reevaluated. Mark Daigneault said he will be in a hard cast for another 1 to 2 weeks. So that's interesting to know, as the March 25th trade deadline, combine those words, is about 3 weeks away. And not head-turning news, but Josh Hall, rookie two-way player Josh Hall, is back with the Thunder. He's returned from the G League bubble. He was actually with the team in Dallas tonight. He's inactive, though, with, I think it's left knee soreness. He actually only played one game in the bubble, so has been dealing with a knee issue there. And then
you expect him to be placed into any kind of rotation or not necessarily? You think they'll play him a little bit?
Probably not. No.
Probably not.
He wasn't.
Well, why would you bring him up then?
Well, I think the reason to bring him back is if I don't know the extent of this knee injury, but if he wasn't going to play for sure, I think they like bringing guys back to have them rehab in Oklahoma City. It's kind of similar to what they did with Veet Krejci, the second round pick. He's on the blue roster, but he never went to the bubble because he's rehabbing an ACL injury. He just stayed in Oklahoma City. So that's my guess. I don't know. Josh Hall wasn't in the rotation to begin with. He's definitely a long-term project as far as a guy who never played college basketball, but who knows? I mean, he could crack, I wouldn't say the rotation, but some spot minutes here and there. And then not huge news on this either, but Lu Dort and Théo Maledon were both named to the World Rising Stars roster. The Rising Stars game will not be played this year due to a tightened COVID schedule during the All-Star break. But I don't know if you got a chance to look at the rosters, Barry, but any thoughts on Maledon and Dort being two of the 10 guys on all world team?
Yes, I glanced at the rosters. I didn't analyze them. Who was snubbed, who was placed, all those kinds of things. One of the funny things about the NBA on an annual basis is the amount of angst spent over who does and doesn't make the Rising Stars game. There's a lot of it's sort of a Twitter frenzy, sort of a lot of fun. But it's cool that somebody recognized that Dort and Maledon are coming around and coming along. So, and it's good that they're not playing a meaningless game to get hurt. So. All's well that never starts. So, I just hope that nothing kooky comes out of this All-Star game, because it's probably a game that doesn't need to be played.
No. I mean,
to me, it's almost insufferable, even in a non-COVID type situation.
Last year was such a good All-Star game, I think, because of the Elam ending, which our good friend Matty Lee wrote a great story about. At the time, Chris Paul knew the guy who came up with that ending. But I think this year is probably going to be a train wreck. Like, they're squeezing everything in. None of the superstars really want to be there. And I think it might be not the easiest thing to watch.
Well, and you know what's interesting is they've got, I guess they've talked about some of the stars into competing in some of the stuff, because they're not going to bring a bunch of rum-dums into the All-Star bubble. You know, the three-point shooting is Curry and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and I forgot who else, but, you know, name brand players, and they got the skills as Chris Paul, Luka Doncic, and people like that. So maybe they've talked some of these stars into saying, hey, since you're going to be there anyway, let's compete in this stuff. But, you know, as long as I don't have to watch it, I don't care if they have an all-star game. Just, you know, if there's something else on TV I can try to digest, I will.
I remember telling you about the game last year because I don't think you watched it.
No, I didn't watch it. When, you know, when Durant and Westbrook were in it, you know, that's semi-interesting. But otherwise, no. Well, you know what I wish would happen in the All-Star game? I wish Rudy Gobert would go out there and try to block every shot, because that's what makes him an all-star, his defensive prowess, his fantastic rim protection. You know, somebody like Steph Curry, he's an all-star. He goes out there and tries to make shots. He doesn't try to go out there and miss. So why would anybody expect Rudy Gobert to go out there and let guys drive right to the rim and for a dunk?
Well,
so to me, that would make the game fun if somebody went out there and just played crazy defense.
I'm sort of laughing thinking about it, but Lou Dort, do you think he would try to, like, lock up LaMelo Ball in the Rising Stars game?
Yes, I do think Lou Dort does not strike me, and maybe I could be wrong, and maybe I'll be disappointed, but he does not strike me as a guy that would say, oh, okay, this doesn't count. I think he'd go out there and so it's too bad that that's not – it's too bad that that's not going to happen. That would make me want to watch the Rising Stars game.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to get into before we hop off is the Thunder, in an email to its season ticket holders on Tuesday, let them know that no fans will be allowed at Thunder home games for the remainder of the season. And that's really significant news, Barry, because this is at a time where we've seen several teams just in the last couple of days, the Spurs, the 76ers, the Hornets, announce that they are going to reopen their arenas at a reduced capacity for the second half of the season. The Mavericks tonight, where the Thunder played, they had a few thousand fans there. I think they have like a 25% capacity limit. So it was sort of surprising to me because I knew some sort of fan-related news was coming, but I thought it would be the opposite. I thought they would be announcing that they're going to let some people in, but they sort of in their email, they said that there was a number of factors. The first was the safety of the fans, which I really truly appreciate, that, you know, the numbers are going down, but they're going, we want to keep them down, and, you know, letting a bunch of people into basketball games might not be the best way to do that. I don't know if they wanted to fight with mass compliance or not. Certainly that would have been a requirement. They also said that because of the fan experience is so good at Thunder home games, they did not want to inhibit that in any way. But I don't know. I just saw it. According to ESPN, the Thunder is the first team to say no more for the rest of the season. Other teams haven't laid down a blanket rule. But what were your thoughts on that?
I'd like to know the real reason why. And it may, I think it could be something like they don't know that it's worth the hassle.
Yeah.
They don't know that.
Especially in Oklahoma.
And yes, that's true. And you know what else? I don't hear a ton of fans clamoring to get in. I mean, nobody sent me an email. Hey, when's the fans going to let, you know, when's the Thunder going to let fans into the games? When I've hosted radio shows from time to time in the last month or so. Nobody calls in and says, hey, I'm ready to get back to the peak. I don't see a groundswell. You know, in college football season, clearly the fans were wanting to get in to the stadium. I don't anticipate that for the Thunder. One, it's indoors. Two, the team is rebuilding and not generating a ton of excitement. I think the Thunder may have thought, you know what, there's not a heavy demand for it right now. It could just be a hassle. It would be the safest thing. The safest thing is if we don't. Now, it'd probably be fine, and it would probably be okay if you had 3,000 or 4,000. you know, spread out in the Chesapeake Arena. That probably wouldn't, you know, poke the pandemic. But, you know, it's just a case of, you know, the Thunder might just think, let's just play this out and put all of our stock into coming back in October and getting people excited for a team that's going to include another or two, hopefully, maybe, young players that can turn this thing around.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% think it's the safest and most responsible thing to do. I don't think that's debatable in any sense. Now you have, I think there is probably a way to do it safely. Other teams have certainly explored that and I assume are doing it. But like, you just wonder how they balance that against the dollars, because I assume that money is driving a lot of these decisions. Having that game night revenue back, obviously you're paying more staff and to open it up and stuff like that. But I'm with you. I'm curious as to what, like, I know what the sanitized version is. I know what they said to the season ticket members. I asked Al Horford pregame about it. He was very much on message saying, you know, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. This is the safest thing to do. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander said after the game that he was disappointed, but he thinks it's the right thing to do. So everyone is on the same page. But you do just wonder, like, what those real reasons are, especially when, you know, they sort of went the opposite way that a lot of teams are doing right now.
Yeah, and you know, I'll be interested in seeing who else. I don't think the Thunder will be the only team doing this, but they're the first team to say it. So, you know, we'll see who else follows along. You know, my impression is the people who are upset are not people who really wanted to get back to Thunder games. They're people who want to make a political statement, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's not, like I said, If I was hearing from Thunder fans that were saying, "Hey, I gotta get to the arena," it'd and be different.
Just to put it out there, you hear from a lot of emails and phone calls and everything like that from readers.
Oh yeah, I mean, people, you know, they call them, you know, they call and want to know why the game's, you know, not on TV or what channel it is. I mean, I get all kinds of stuff, and I still get all the kind of Thunder calls. You know, people get all fired up when Lou Dort hits a shot, but I don't know that those people want to go watch Lou Dort shoot this season. I think they're sort of ready for, you know, to get this past. Because I thought SGA said the best thing I've heard in a long time. He's actually got a lot of good sense. He's pretty sharp for a 22-year-old. He said, "Hey, you said part of what he said was, hey, you know, I wish we could have fans, and you know, we miss the energy, all that stuff." But then he said, "I'm for whatever gets us back to normal quickest." That's mm-hmm. what he wants. He did, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people in Chesapeake Arena is not anything to get excited about.
Yeah, exactly.
And that to me is a little, it's as much sad as anything. So, you know, if whatever we can do to get back to normal, and you know, my goal is August. That's when I want things to be set up. So, I don't know. I don't know why the Thunder came at this. I think they're financially in good shape. They're not hemorrhaging money. The tickets that they would sell are not the high dollar. You know, nobody's sitting courtside.
Yeah.
At NBA games. So you know, they're not going to get those, whatever they cost, 1,000, 10,000, I don't know what,
like,
they cost.
In games with fans at the stands, you can't even like see them on a lot of the broadcasts.
That's exactly it. I wasn't for sure there were fans until I got an end zone shot of a free throw, and you could see, you know, up in the stands a while. So,
yeah.
I think it'd been fine if they wanted to have fans in, but I think it's fine that they don't.
Yeah. Well, we will wrap it up there. The first half of the season is almost over. The Thunder, some teams are already off. The Thunder has one more game Thursday night at the Spurs to wrap up the first half of the season. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Thunder Buddies podcast, and we will be back with you on Thursday night.